Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Chip Conley, founder of Joie de Vivre, the second largest boutique hotel operator in the US, and co-founder of Modern Elder Academy, the midlife wisdom school. Having launched Joie de Vivre when he was just 26 with a single hotel in a tough San Francisco neighbourhood, Chip grew his company into the second largest operator of boutique hotels in the US. But in his late 40s, he started to dislike his job and at the same time experienced financial and deep personal loss that together brought about a sense of crisis. After a serious allergic reaction to an antibiotic from which Chip almost died, he sought to change his life. 2 years after selling Joie de Vivre, a small tech startup called Airbnb asked Chip to help them create a democratized hospitality world as their head of global hospitality and strategy. But it was his unofficial title as their modern elder that gave Chip an epiphany. Why don't we have places where people can repurpose and reimagine themselves while also consciously curating the second half of their life? Chip launched Modern Elder Academy, MEA, in 2018, and they now support over 4,000 alumni from 47 countries to develop a renewed sense of purpose and happiness in midlife. And boy, isn't that important. For transparency's sake, we are not in the same place. I mean, we are in the universe together, Chip. We are talking together, but you are not with me in the studio. Where are you today, Mr. Chip Conley?
I am in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the land of enchantment.
The land of enchantment. And there is a time difference, which means it's bright and breezy, even earlier for you than it is for me. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
The 26-year-old Chip, why did he start his business then? What led him to that moment?
You know, I was an entrepreneur as a teenager. I tried all kinds of different businesses. And as I went into college, I was still fascinated by that, but I also felt like I needed to get a job. So I went to business school, got my master's in business, and did all the things you normally would do. But that entrepreneurial urge was still there. And then in my mid-20s, I started to notice that boutique hotels were making a first impression in the United States. And I was a real estate developer, and I felt like, okay, maybe I can take that real estate development background and apply it to boutique hotels. And that's really how it happened. And I called it Joie de Vivre partly because I wanted to have joy in my life.
And before the real estate bit, I mean, just interested because it's people's journeys always fascinate me. The real estate thing was just happenstance, or was it, again, a strategic Chip post-MBA going, this is going to make me some money?
Well, it's interesting. My uncle was a very successful commercial real estate developer and broker, and he took me under his wing, so he mentored me. So I learned from him, but quite honestly, I didn't want to have his life. He was doing industrial buildings mostly. It was really boring. And so that's why boutique hotels, which are sort of the opposite of industrial buildings, were what attracted me. And the money piece of it was never important to me. Never has been, in fact. Yes, it's helped that I've done well over time. But money for the money's sake might mean I was a litigator. Oh, no. Did I say that?
Of course not. Perish the thought. Can I? And then just again, when I look, you know, I get the chance, the privilege to look at people's pasts and things. And I looked at photos of you with these beautifully flamboyant, you know, clothes back in the 80s and doing your thing. Was it, apart from the sense that there was an opportunity there, was it the joie de vivre point? Was it really that you were enjoying your life and you wanted to augment it, or actually you weren't enjoying the real estate business and you really wanted to find it?
Yeah, I would say I was not enjoying the real estate business, and I was very curious about boutique hotels because I like design, I like serving people, I like being creative. So all of those were really good for the boutique hotel business, not so good for the industrial building business. And so that led me to taking that path. And the reason I called it Joie de Vivre was yes, it was for my own joy, but it was also, I wanted to create a culture that created joy for our employees and for our customers as well.
And you ran that for a long time. And actually, for those people that are familiar, 24 years, and now it's called JDV, and it was it's part of the Hyatt Group. And at one point, if I understand correctly, 52 hotels. Is that how many?
That's right.
That's a lot of hotels. So you build this business up, and it gets big. And I read about the tension between the creativity and the fun and the freedom that you used to enjoy, and then suddenly you're in a big machine. Do you think you called it right time-wise? Or do you think, truthfully, if you look back, you would have gone, you know what, I really should have done this a bit earlier?
Oh, I should have done it earlier. As a company, we survived the dot-com bust and 9/11 and did really well. And I should have sold after that. But soon after that, we went into the Great Recession. And I had been a gladiator for the prior downturn, and I was a victim in this downturn. Mm. And so it's no good to be the CEO of a fast-growing company when you feel victimized being in that role. So if I could do it over again, I would have probably sold the company 5 years earlier. And at that point, had some space in my life. But instead, I went into the Great Recession sort of in a dark place and opened 15 hotels in 21 months right as we were going into the recession. So it was terrible timing. And everything else in my life was falling apart too. So I thank God I made it through that time. It's one of those moments in one's life you look back and say, it probably will never be as bad as that.
And you talk a lot about wisdom and the wisdom that comes with age. If you can juxtapose the lessons you learned building a 52-hotel empire with the lessons you learned in your life, and then moving forward to the next chapter, which was this small rinky-dink startup called Airbnb.
Yeah.
Which are the biggest lessons for you that you've then lent on as you moved into that next phase, which I do want to touch on, because there aren't many people that know what the inside dealings are of a global behemoth like an Airbnb are.
Yeah. So I think I learned the lesson as the CEO and founder of Joie de Vivre that I don't have to be the hero all the time. And that was a hard lesson to learn because I think my ego got stroked by the fact that I could go out and solve problems and make everything good. And everybody loved me as a result of that. And so when I sold the company, I was sort of in a place of like, okay, who wants me to be their hero? And what happened when the founders of Airbnb reached out to me, it was obviously a tiny company at that time, I realized pretty quickly that I had to right-size my ego. So the lesson or the wisdom I had there was like the way I had lived my life and my career at Joie de Vivre was not going to be what I could do at Airbnb because I was not the CEO. Yes, I was a CEO whisperer. I was the in-house mentor to the founders. But I also was reporting to Brian Chesky, the CEO and co-founder, who was 21 years younger than me. So I wasn't going to get my name and my face in the paper very often, like I used to. And I wasn't going to be running our leadership meetings. But I was going to be making sure that Brian got his name in the paper in good ways, and that he ran good meetings. So it really pushed me from being the egocentric CEO to the, I don't know, soul-centric mentor, coach, and almost like father figure to Brian. And that was a huge lesson and a big relief as well, because it was fun to take off my hero's cape.
And alongside taking off your hero's cape, and I get the ego putting it at the door, as people say, and then that sense of serving rather than being, as you said, the solver of everything. In terms of the life lesson stuff, and, you know, I alluded to it at the beginning, and I don't quite know how the timing's scanned with this, but losing friends, getting that sense of mortality, which happens when you lose a loved one. I lost my father not that long ago, and there is an immediate sense of your own mortality in a really strange way that you is utterly experiential in the same way having children is utterly experiential. It's just one of those things you can't quite describe. What did you take from that, Chip, as much as the I'm now the whisperer and I'm happy not to be the hero? What else was going on for you?
Well, yeah, I lost five male friends to suicide, ages 42 to 52 during the Great Recession. And I had my NDE, where I died 9 times in 90 minutes due to an allergic reaction to an antibiotic. So I think what really was top of mind for me in my late 40s and early 50s was every moment matters. And I wanted to seize the day. But instead of seizing the day as the entrepreneur who's just going to go out and work myself to death, instead it was more like seize the day in my relationships and in my hobbies and in writing, because I love writing books. I really created a more multidimensional life because I figured I didn't know when I'm going to die. And I don't want to be that person who on his deathbed regrets not going to Iceland or, you know, not, you know, going around the world to experience the world's best festivals. So those are the kinds of things I did.
Stay with me for much more from my guest. It's Chip Conley. He'll be back in a couple of minutes with more wisdom, I'm sure. And we'll be talking also about 12 reasons why life gets better with age. Learning to love midlife. And by the way, I love midlife. I think I'm much better now than I was when I was in my 20s and 30s. But I'm sure my friends and family would agree. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Mishkon Academy digital sessions, which can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Mishkon Derea's Emily Knight talks to Charlotte Yong, a fund manager at Troy Asset Management, about how firms can actively encourage diversity when recruiting.
The Mishkon Academy digital sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
Clearly, it's so important for firms to actively scrutinise their recruitment processes for elements of unconscious bias and the kind of knock-on effect which that has. How do you think firms can actively encourage diversity when recruiting?
Yeah, this is a great question. And from my perspective, the way to do this is you need a diverse pipeline is first. So you need to have really good breadth of candidates. That's just key. And then the people who are doing the interviewing and making the decisions, make sure that there's representation from all across the firm, even if that involves bringing in someone more junior who might not normally be involved in the interview process. Ask them what they think and make sure that they're involved. There are some great studies. There's a book called Noise, which basically talks about if you want to make the best decisions, often actually a group conversation first isn't the best. So you've done your interview, you're having a debrief. Maybe before you all get into a room and start doing groupthink, where, you know, the most senior person who perhaps is the stereotypical white male fund manager, maybe just before you get into that room, just take a straw poll of what everyone thinks independently. And then you really make sure that the reservations that the junior analyst had, but she's a little bit too sort of cautious to make in front of everyone else, make sure that those reservations are documented. And I think then, yeah, you come to a much better decision.
The Mishkon Academy digital sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit mishkon.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Derea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your favorite podcast platform. My guest today, I'm super pleased to say, is Chip Conley, founder of Joie de Vivre, what a great name, the second largest boutique hotel operator in the US, as was, and co-founder of Modern Elder Academy, the midlife wisdom school. We were talking before about your role as the CEO whisperer. You put your ego in the locker room before you came in, which sounds to me like you were very happy to do that by the looks of things. What was it like in those years at Airbnb? Because you were there for a few. Did you watch the child become the adolescent, become the adult as a business, but without losing its sense of spunkiness and of disruption?
Yeah, quirky, spunky disruption while having to scale globally and be a disruptor, but hopefully a friendly one. It was quite a fascinating journey. 4 years full-time, 3.5 years part-time. I think what I noticed more than anything was Brian, as the CEO who I was mentoring, really matured as a leader. His background was that he was a designer and a creative from Rhode Island School of Design, but he had no background in business at all. And so my job was really to help him be a phenomenal leader. And I'm proud to say that 3.5 years after the company went public, he's still the CEO. And the company had to mature. When I joined, I was 52 and the average age in the company was 26. They called me the modern elder because not just I was so much older, but they said I was someone who's as curious as they are wise. And I like that. So I was like, oh, wow, the alchemy of curiosity and wisdom. But that's what I tried to infuse in the company. How do we get curious? How do we get wise? And how, instead of trying to be the smartest person in the room, how are we the most curious or the wise person in the room? Because generally tech companies in Silicon Valley are full of people who want to outsmart each other. And that doesn't create a great culture. So I'm proud of the culture that I helped shape along with the founders. And it was quite a journey for me because I also had to be an intern as much of a mentor because I'd never worked in a tech company before. And so I was often the dumbest person in the room. But by being curious, sometimes I would ask questions that were like, oh, wow, Chip just found a blind spot here.
And, you know, this is a company we're talking about, which is super successful. It's one of the probably the most top 10 most famous companies that have emerged over the last few years anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. If there were one or two things that you could pick on that underpin why it's been sustainably successful, yeah, what would they be?
Well, to the founders' credit, there's never been a company that got to the valuation of Airbnb, over $100 billion, where the three founders stayed involved. Joe is no longer as involved, but for a dozen years, you had three founders. And that was hard because they had their times where they were at odds with each other because of personality types or even strategy. So part of my job and a couple of the other senior people was to make sure the three of them saw each other's value. So I think that was one thing. I think the fact we had a very vibrant culture and we invested in that culture was essential because one of the things that happens as you grow is you have this juxtaposition of scaling versus soul. Scale versus soul. And so the culture was where we invested in that soul. And so new people coming, I mean, if you're more than doubling the number of people every year coming into the company, there are a lot of people who don't know the history.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, this is the conundrum for any business scaling. And yes, I'm sure anyone who's going even from 10 to 20 or from 1,000 to 1,500 or whatever it might be people-wise. So just again, give me one, I want one little clue as to how you would ensure that the soul, that the culture is protected even as you really get big.
Yeah, let me give you a specific one. We did something called one Airbnb every year. We had people in 22 countries. This is before remote work, 22 offices around the world. Once a year, we brought everybody, every single employee. Ultimately, that was 3,000 employees the last time we did it while I was there. And we had a four-day festival that was dedicated to helping everybody feel like they understood the company, where we were going, our strategy, and feeling connected. So that's a good example. It was expensive to do that, but it was worth it.
You talk a lot about wisdom. You talk a lot about the beauty of growing older and the wisdom that comes with it. I assume that therefore the foundation of your thoughts around the MEA, the Modern Elder Academy, it was all about that, was about saying, well, how can I bring more people into the fold? How can I proselytize? Is that right? Or was it something a bit less noble than that?
No, it was the point of view of like, hey, I hated my late 40s. I've loved my 50s. What the heck is going on with midlife? Is it a crisis or is it a chrysalis? Chrysalis being that midlife stage for a butterfly, where it's dark and gooey and solitary, but it's where the transformation happens. And so I think for me, I really thought about my five male friends who took their own lives and thought about the fact that, wow, what if there was a school or some tools or a rite of passage or ritual that someone can do in midlife to understand how to reimagine and repurpose themselves? And so that's how MEA came about. We've had over 4,000 people from 47 countries come to our Baja campus, which is just down the beach from where you popped the question.
I
did. Is that right?
It is absolutely true. I think it must have been 2011 or 2012, I stayed in a hotel called Rancho Pescadero, which is in Baja California, near where I'm talking to you now. I'm not jealous at all, obviously. And I did indeed pop the question there. And it's what a spot. And I look at you and you're in this fabulously, it looks like a nice tall ceiling, classic kind of Mexican architecture or kind of New Mexican architecture. And I am a little bit jealous. It's got to be said, Chip, it's got to be said. I want to transport myself.
The fact that we have two campuses and one is in on a beach in Mexico and the other one is on a 2,600-acre regenerative horse ranch in beautiful New Mexico, you know, I feel very lucky. But yeah, the 4,000 people came from all over the world to try to reframe their relationship with aging, navigate their transitions, cultivate their purpose, and learn how to own their wisdom. Because a lot of times what is obvious to us is wisdom to someone else. Mm. It's just that you've gotten so used to it that you didn't realize how valuable it is and how 20 years ago, you didn't know that.
And how has this been received? I guess obviously 4,000, you know, alumni would say,
yeah,
it's kind of working. But what is it that what is it that people get that they can't get on their own by thinking about these things? What are you giving them?
Well, first of all, we give them a framework and some tools and practices that help them to understand how to navigate transitions and cultivate purpose. But more importantly, you're in a cohort of 24 people, a very diverse group of people. And you're learning from each other because wisdom is not taught, it's shared. And so for us to curate some conversations that are like life-changing, that help people to see, for example, 10 years from now, what will I regret if I don't learn it or do it now? That's one of maybe a dozen classic questions we have that help people to get clear on how they consciously curate the second half of their life.
Stay with me for my final chat with my guest there, Chip Conley. And we've got some Madeline Peru for you as well. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
The delicious sound of Madeline Peru with Getting Some Fun Out of Life. Well, that's appropriate, isn't it? Well done, Stu, producer. Mm. Because I've been talking to Chip Conley about just that very thing. And it's indeed you've transitioned, Chip, from building a really creative business in the hotel space, disrupting things, helping one of the biggest companies in the world continue to disrupt, and as you said, soul alongside the scale journey. And now here you are imparting wisdom and indeed sharing it, as you said. You're a writer as well now, and I'm really lucky. I get to meet lots of super talented people that are successful. Some people are really good at writing, and some people are really good at doing. It's very few that are good at doing both. What is it that you enjoy about the writing process?
You know, when I sit down to write, it's almost like we've put an IV to my soul. It just gives me the opportunity to reflect upon what's going on inside of me. So my process of writing 7 books at this point has been to make sense of what I've learned along the way and to impart that to others. So the newest book is called Learning to Love Midlife, 12 Reasons Why Life Gets Better with Age. And what I really wanted to do with this book was to help people to see that the world is full of anti-aging messages and products and services, but there aren't a whole lot of pro-aging services or messages. And Yale academic named Becca Levy has shown that when people shift their mindset from a negative to a positive when it comes to aging, they gain 7.5 years of additional years of life. And so this is a public service.
It is.
Because if we really can help people to see that aging has its flaws, but it also has its upsides. We help them to not just live longer, but to live happier.
Do you think this is your purpose? Because we talk a lot about purpose and people get sometimes a little bit kind of chocolate box about it. And they do those nice, you know, it's the bumper sticker that says, "Hi, I found my purpose," and all that. But listening to you talk and thinking about, at one point, your purpose was to make hotels fun and bring a sense of community and kind of 2 fingers up to the establishment and all that.
Yeah.
And then it was about helping others in pursuit of growing their business. And now here you are. To me, it looks like you're in the sweet spot of exactly what it means to you.
So it does. think there's four ways to find your purpose: something that excites you, something that agitates you, something that makes you curious, or something that's sort of been forgotten from childhood or early adulthood. A passion, for example. And for me, I'm excited, deeply excited about the idea of remaking our relationship with aging, helping people to feel good about being age fluid, meaning you're not defined by your chronological age or your generation. So yes, this feels like my calling, but I also think that people need to get, when it comes to purpose, they need to get less worried about the big P purpose and focus on the small P purpose, because you can have performance anxiety about the big P purpose, meaning everybody else has one and I don't have one. So the most important thing to do in terms of finding one's purpose is to find the thing that makes you purposeful. Do the verb and you'll find the noun.
It's been really nice talking to you, Chip.
Thank you.
From my huge latent sense of wanting to be where you are rather than where I am. Apart from that, I've parked it. I'm managing that agitation, which I know won't be part of my purpose going forward, because that's not deep enough to just want to be in Santa Fe. But thank you so much for your time. Just before I let you go off and enjoy your day and walk on the beach and enjoy the sun, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
Bill Withers, Lovely Day.
And any particular reason beyond the obvious?
Because every day should be lovely.
Bill Withers there with Lovely Day, the song choice of my business shaper, Chip Conley. You don't have to be the hero all the time, he said, of his first business. Once he'd finished it, he realised that actually he didn't need to do the same thing the next time. I had to right-size my ego. And he talked about how he became the CEO whisperer in Airbnb, and I really like that expression. I created a more multidimensional life, one of the big lessons he learned after spending so long running and creating his first business. He helped each of the founders believe and understand the value in the others. I think that's a really important thing to think about when it comes to founding a business, especially if you're in a partnership. And finally, that sense of you can scale with soul, but you've got to work very hard on the soul. And indeed, the soul is probably what enables you to grow in a healthy and sustainable way. Great stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a super duper wonderful, fabulous weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM.
In partnership with Mishkondareya.
It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/jazzshapers.